You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. You are officially on the couch here with Dr. Michelle. That's me. And as always, I have a super special guest today. And we're talking about meditation. We're talking about learning about your own mind, the self, who you are, what's really important in this human experience in terms of what I feel about this book that I'm going to share with you and my special author today, about what our journey is all about, why we're here, the things that we really are here to experience, which is the joy and the happiness and just feeling the wonderful spirit of being a human soul. And that's what it's about. So let me introduce my special guest. And here he comes, Sivan Hassett. Hi there.
Hello.
Thank you so much for joining me today on the couch. I appreciate it.
Such a pleasure.
It's great to have you. Thank you. What a great book you've written. Here it is. There it is. Little bouncing there off. It's called Entering the Mind. Sivan Hassett is amazing. He's a writer, editor, the publisher of Riot Material magazine. I don't know if you've ever seen that before, but you guys should really check it out, and also his website. He's also a decades-long practitioner of it's called Dzogchen, right? It's a radical, if not revolutionary, wisdom practice. It points the practitioner directly towards the recognition of their own mind, there but to awaken. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, is awakening your mind. And this is a wonderful, amazing technique that has been passed down. By the way, Hassett has spent much of his life in contemplative retreat. I am so jealous. Well, I could do that too, I guess. The latter of these years in the high desert of the Northern Mojave, and he's in Los Angeles now, here on Pacific time, and welcome again. So we're going to get started and just sort of roll into, why do you call your book Entering the Mind?
Well, it just felt the simplest language for what we're actually doing. And we're entering the mind and to look at it beneath the conceptual mind. We're looking at a mind that really gives rise to our entire experience, gives rise to our personality, our very sense of being. And so this mind is just there, just quietly resting below us at all times. And nobody in the Western world is skilled enough or even knows much about how to introduce us to this mind. And the Tibetans for, nearly a century or 1,000 years have been practicing and pointing towards this mind and speaking to this mind. And they have really perfected this beautiful technique. It goes all the way back to the Buddha himself, who imparted these teachings. But the Tibetans have really made it a simple entry point in terms of understanding. And then it's up to us to practice it and get familiar with our state and really get to know it. And in doing that, all of these confusions and conflicts that are within us, they just disappear like smoke coming out of a chimney. It's gone. So it's really an amazing technique.
I love that. And how does Dzogchen differ from other types of meditative techniques? And I know you've probably explored all of them.
Yes. Well, it is quite different in many ways. I mean, all meditation is great because it allows us to relax. It allows us to kind of release stress, observe our anxiety if we have anxiety, all these things that meditations bring. Then you have the great traditions of the East, which point most practitioners to this idea of emptiness.
Right.
Dzogchen also has this as part of an integral part of their practice. But combined with this, which makes Dzogchen unique, is along with emptiness, we have our awareness.
Wow.
And awareness and emptiness are basically of one space. So whereas Zen points us to emptiness and we rest in emptiness, we don't recognize who is looking at this emptiness. We're not given the teachings to say your own awareness is doing this. And this is rarely spoken to, even in Buddhism. Most Buddhism all the way up through the top,
right,
to emptiness. They speak to the illusory nature of our world. But they don't speak to the awareness that knows this.
Right.
And this is the key element that makes Dzogchen so unique. Mm-hmm. So it's really getting to know your own awareness. Yeah. And in coming to know your own awareness, the source of this awareness, which is not necessarily the body, then in doing that, we also recognize the emptiness of the body, which is, it's not what we call it. It isn't how we perceive it. And this all comes with the teachings.
Yeah. Interesting, you know, you said that, and it, you know, there is a difference in a lot of different techniques in terms of, you know, going into a meditative state. Empty your mind.
Yes.
You know, they say empty your mind. Yeah. And it's like, okay, sure, can do, but yeah. It's different, you know, they're the emptiness and the awareness.
Yeah, you can get bored with this idea of looking only at emptiness. And, right. You know, and emptiness becomes a subject. So we are looking at this thing called emptiness. Whereas if you're understanding that awareness and emptiness are of the same essence, then not only are you exploring emptiness, but you're exploring your own personal awareness. And this is where it gets exciting, because then you're really breaking apart the puzzle and really coming to see the true nature of yourself. And this is, you never get bored in doing this. And this is the fuel that continues, that brings fire to your meditation at all times, and your willingness, your want at all times to continue to go back into meditation, because what you're doing is looking at yourself as right. much as you are looking at the empty nature of all things.
Don't you think maybe by the time they get to Dzogchen, they're not afraid of this. A lot of yeah. people find it very hard and scary to just look at themselves.
Yes. Be
aware of being aware.
Yes.
You know, so who am I? What is the I? Am it, you know, and they go into all that stuff. It's a little scary. Right?
Yeah. And that's the conceptual mind doing what it does best.
Right.
Deflecting, keeping our awareness looking outward at other things so we can judge things in order to feel better about ourselves, or we can deny some of our own experiences because society's saying no to us. So we ignore those internal wants and desires. What Dzogchen is asking of us is to really truly look at ourselves, but it gives us the tools to do it in such a way where we're not afraid to look in, rather we befriend what we find within. So our trauma, our pain, our sense of shame, the Dzogchen teachings say, you know, you want to get to know these things because they're driving you in ways that are very unconscious ways. And you're doing things unconsciously because these fears and these traumas are pushing you away from looking in. And so let's just befriend them, look at them, spend time with them. They're not going to hurt you in the end. When you look at them directly, that's the safest place to be with them, rather than turning your back to them. Because when you turn your back to anything, that's when trouble happens. So, yeah, it's an amazing set of teachings.
Yes, it really is. Sounds wonderful. And, yeah, I think psychologically speaking, you know, studied old school and all that, we do, and we shove all that stuff down and ignore it, and then we're dealing with the brain, I guess, whatever. I don't even think scientists know what the brain's about. But the brain versus the mind, I guess, you know, they're shoving stuff into the subconscious trauma from early experiences, and then they're piled upon. The mountain gets larger of the fears and the worries, and we continue to shove that stuff down. So yeah. I guess what we're doing is we're, you know, the ego, it's, and I hate to go ego, because everybody talks about the ego, not the Freudian ego, but that,
yeah.
that which is what you were just talking about, is always judging, is always left brain analyzing, judging, thinking. Yeah. I think, and you know, you as an artist as well, and Rachel, yeah. you know, it's like you guys are in the right brain a lot. I mean, you're there.
Well, and art and meditation, you know, the artist and the meditation practitioner, they're kind of aiming it in the same direction, and they're exploring the same terrains. One is expressing it through the arts, and the others learning to express it through a whole different perspective on the world, a new perception on the world. But the terrains are very similar, and they're both going into this wisdom zone quietly and returning yes. with something. The artist is returning with the art, which is beautiful. And the meditation practitioner is returning with knowledge and these teachings that are so beautiful. So yes, they're kindred, I think.
Yes, I think you're right. By the way, in case you just tuned in, guys, my special guest, Sivan Hassett, and his co-author, partner, Rachel Reed-Wilkie. He couldn't be here with us today, but we're talking about their book. Here we go, Entering the Mind. Wonderful read. There's my ring camera. You can see that right there. Beautiful. Helps me out there. So it's the perspective of the self that we aim to realize. Hmm. So it's that self. You know, I was talking quite a while back with Anita Morjani. She's, I don't know, you know Anita Morjani.
Part of her, yes, I don't know her.
She's written a lot of books and has speaking a lot lately about, you know, her out-of-body experience. She
yes.
has stage 4 cancer and left her body, went out, learned a lot, saw some folks.
Yes.
But I think she said the scariest part for her was not having the body to identify with and being, just being. There was no time, no thing, no where, no ego. It was just her alone with herself.
Yes.
Her emptiness.
Yes.
And yet she was aware of the folks who were talking with her and what they were telling her. But mm-hmm. she, everything was one.
Yes.
We were all attached. We were all one. So
beyond the cliche of this idea of everything is one.
That's right.
The reality is, and she experienced it, we will die. All of us are going yeah. to die. And yeah. when we do, we drop this body and we dropped all of the dualities and the conceptual things we impute onto this from this body. And we arrive at this place of oneness, this awareness. And it's very scary. As she says, this yeah. sudden not having the body can be scary in itself when we leave it, because when we leave it, we're still aware.
Right.
So part of the training is you get to experience the observance of the body. That's not awareness coming through the eyes, but it's the body is now resting within the awareness. And you begin to see that we are not our body.
Right.
And when we move into the death state, which is what all meditation practices are ultimately pointing us yes. towards, preparing yes. us for death, is that we don't get shocked by the fact that we've lost our body. That it's no longer, we don't need to be so attached to it. And we can then rest in that amazing moment of losing the body and being with ourselves in awareness. And this is what all the great masters throughout the centuries have said is our best opportunity to enlighten, to awaken is
right.
at that moment when the body drops. Because the body does bring a lot of complications with it
yeah.
and conflicting energies that make it difficult to recognize our own nature.
That is so true. And that's funny. You just tuned in to me because I was just going to ask you, when we recognize our own specific, unique awareness.
Yes.
So that is enlightenment. How would you define enlightenment?
Well, on the one hand, I've been aiming for that all my life. So I have a romantic notion of it.
Yes.
And this notion is getting more and more put into a more realized box, the more I recognize that it's not anything different than what we have now or what we're seeing now. It's simply that we don't have all the attachments. So I can't speak to this idea of enlightenment because I'm not enlightened.
Sure.
I have a sense of remaining stable for short periods of time in this idea of the natural state, which is the realized state, which if you're in that state for 24 hours a day, you're basically an enlightened being. You know, the Dalai Lama, I would imagine, is in this state 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And he speaks to us as if he's just another human being, but he has something else. He has these amazing qualities that come with being an enlightened being, like joy, love, compassion. All these things are the natural energies of the enlightened state. So if you want to know what the enlightened state is, try to look to your most beautiful experience of love and compassion or just feeling joy and remaining mm-hmm. stable in that and having no attachment to any of it. And that could be a reference point.
Right. Beautiful. And while we are, you know, not meditating or, you know, in our frontal lobe and we're, you know, just going crazy with our cognitions, would it help us to try to let go of some of our labels and our stories and our fixed identities, working on it in the so-called beta brain conscious mind, would that be a good thing to do?
Maybe. But also, you know, just like saying to yourself, you know, that is that story true? Like the major story of so many of us here in the West is I'm an addict. I'm addicted to this.
Or I'm
a depressed person, or people tell us you're an angry person. And so we take on these labels, and these labels get reinforced time and again. And so the key to really moving through a lot of your own trauma, and even speaking to I was traumatized, I was abused as a child. All of those stories are solidifying, and they perpetuate the truth of that experience. But the experience, when you look at it, could have been years and years ago. The addiction maybe isn't so much an addiction, but it's part of a larger set of stories that we tell each other. So all you're being asked to do is to sit down and look at the truth of these stories. Yes, it's real, but is it true that you really feel this experience, but is it true? And, you know, when you do come to meditate on these things and really look at them squarely, they are not true. They don't have much truth to them. They are real for sure. The reality is you're experiencing the truth of these stories, but the stories themselves are stories.
Yes. Very, really lovely. So when we're practicing Dzogchen, are we more likely to lose those labels and all that? I mean, if we practice that on a regular basis, are we more likely to look at things just as an observer?
Yes.
And just not. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it happens on its both on its own, but it also happens because you're consciously doing the looking and observing the story and letting the story go, detaching yourself more and more. But as you do this, it happens on its own. And the stories of depression and the feelings of depression begin to dissipate as well.
Mm-hmm.
As the stories leave, there's nothing for the actual experience to hold on to, and they begin to disappear. And again, what comes in, so this now new renewed sense of looking, this renewed perspective, is no longer laced with sadness or this longing for something better, or it's now recognized for how beautiful is that flower right there. How incredible is that bee, you know, pollinating that flower?
Yes.
You begin to see things anew, and look at even the people who are troublesome to you. They're no longer so troublesome because there's more space between you and them. And there's less of a direct connection between your story and the problems that they create for your story.
Absolutely. That's right. You can, as you know, we said, you know, be more of an observer. Mm-hmm. You know, morning when I'm taking my walks up here in the hills through the trees, you know, I talk, you know, to the trees.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.
You're my favorite tree. You're my favorite frog. You're my favorite.
You know,
try to communicate, you know, with nature, yeah, that kind of thing, because I think that's really important for us as well.
Yes.
And, you know, speaking about nature, I know in your book, you also, you know, talk about trying to eat or healthier, trying to eat organic and what goes on there really. And that we think we're eating healthy sometimes, but we're really not.
Yeah.
So you can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So, you know, for many people, their goal is to truly understand themselves and reach enlightenment. They really, that's their goal. But other people, it's really, I'm tired all the time. I'm in a brain fog all the time. I don't understand. I'm eating pretty well. You know, I'm lots of fruits and vegetables. I'm doing a good job. I don't get what the problem is. But the problem is that most of the food in the world today is just saturated with pesticides. And pesticides, their one goal is to kill. Their goal is to kill bugs. Their goal is to kill the plants in the field that aren't supposed to be there, which is everything but the one crop that they're trying to grow. But more than that, it's killing the soils itself and all the microbiome of the soil. So all the fungi and all the bacteria and all the parasites and viruses, which are natural to the soil, it kills those too. So all these pesticides are water soluble. They go into the water systems. They go into our rain. So they're with us all the time. So we're eating a lot of a lot of the pesticides and drinking a lot of these pesticides that are killing our microbiome. Our microbiome is filled with millions and millions of parasites and bacteria. All of it's healthy. We are alive. We're alive because of our microbiome, which is the soil of our body, which is being killed by pesticides. So the one thing you could do, and it's really easy, and now more than ever it's easy because almost every supermarket has a great organic section, is to buy only organic. And myself, I was that man who was eating really well because I was trying to understand my master's teachings, you know.
And I
couldn't get my head because it was always tired and in a fog. I'd get really
right, sure.
So I realized, you know, like the vegetables that I was eating were saturated with pesticides. So I switched to organic, and within about 3 weeks, I started to feel really good, but not as good as I wanted to be, but cleaner in my mind and my perception. And within 2 months, I was like, now I was a different person. You know, I was less bloated. My head didn't hurt. I was less depressed. You know, all of anxiety, all of these come from your body's dying. And of course, it's struggling to keep up.
Right.
And so the food is a great way to clean things up right away. Just be conscious of what you buy.
That's a great idea. And I really appreciated that part in your book, too, because it is. I mean, it does change. You kind of start feeling more energy. It's like a subtle thing, but you're right. I mean, it's just amazing. So let's talk about fourth time.
Mm.
Okay. So you write about the concept of the present moment, which that's always been a real deal for me. I'm like, what? Seems perplexing because as it turns out, there's no present moment. So you suggest instead in your book that there's only what is known as fourth time. So can you elaborate a little bit on what that means?
Sure. So, you know, the three times would be past, present, and future. And most meditations are saying stick with the present because, you know, this is where everything's happening. And this is where we begin our meditation. We begin by maintaining a sense of awareness of our present moment.
Yes.
When we get to, you know, when you get to the future, then suddenly there's a past because all these things are speaking to one another. And it creates a lot of confusion, a lot of narrative in the mind that's unnecessary. So stick with the present. And then as you move into the awareness of the natural state, which is the mind beneath the conceptual mind, you enter into this place. And then when you're there, you recognize that even a present doesn't exist because like everything else, it's a conceptual idea. If you look at a bird or any animal, they don't have a sense of past, present, or future. They're just in the now. And that now is more of a presence. And the presence is your own awareness. The presence is the awareness of any sentient being that's alive. That's the awareness of each sentient being that is present in the moment. But we're the ones who begin to attach time to these things because we have this ability. Our conceptual minds are amazing. And they're able to break down all kinds of things. And this allows us to be functional in our world. But in reality, if you want to move beyond the mind and prepare for death, where there is no time, then you can enter it through your meditation and recognize that and quantum physics is already speaking to this idea that there is no present either. They understand this very well, and they can actually have formulas to explain that whole thing. But in meditation, you can arrive there through your practice and see it. Through direct perception.
Wow, that is so true. And you know, it's funny. I was listening to this interview on Gaia with I think his name was David Adair and Emily Smith and all these folks. You know, they talk about who have had and I don't want to go there that much, but you know, contact with extraterrestrials.
Yes.
And of course, they're all over the place, and they do. They're not, there's, you know, if they can travel a billion light years, they're doing it through consciousness. And so what they were saying, you know, about the human being here is that they look at us, many of those who can do that, and look at us and go, oh my God, these little beings live on linear time. Yeah. I mean, they're all hooked up into linear time.
Yeah.
How do they, fascinating, you know?
It's true.
I mean, that's,
yeah, I listen to a lot of quantum physicists, and you know, they speak to this idea of no time also. You know, the Tibetans call it the fourth time, but it's essentially a no time. And they're also speaking, the quantum physicists, to looking at the pyramids and all the information there about the higher being, you know, the alien beings who have come and seeded the planet, et cetera, et cetera. It's all such an interesting and fascinating thing that's going on out there. And all we have to do is open up to the various narratives that are around us. And it's just incredible, really.
No, it really is. And we are such a wonderful, and I think as human beings, a lot of people tend to say, oh, well, you know, we're just these little kind of monkey people, but actually we're not. Our bodies and our minds are, you know, we are brilliantly constructed. A lot of genetic engineering, and you know, I think we're really brilliant the way we are. And I think a lot of people don't realize that. And I think that is what sometimes can cause a lot of the illnesses, is the focus on, oh, I am this, I have a label, I am that, I am. But of course, you have experienced, I'm sure, in your life, instant remission with people, or people who have, you know, something, pain or some kind of chronic, you know, disorder.
Yes.
And when they go in to the Dzogchen, they can really eliminate a lot of the bodily concerns, and it sort of disappears.
It literally disappears. It vaporizes on its own. It's not like you're trying. You're trying to understand the teachings and you're practicing the teachings. And in doing that, depression leaves you, the anxiety leaves you, the anger leaves you, even the addictions leave you. All of the things that you've been labeling yourselves as, suddenly you have no ability to do that because they're no longer there. And it just happens as you practice.
Right. I was also listening to, you know, Dr. Joe Dispenza talk about, you know, getting into gamma brainwave.
Yes.
And is that what we're experiencing with Dzogchen?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not really sure on that level what's happening. It'd be very interesting to see, you know, to have that examined or looked at while, you know, you're in the deep in the practice. But you're definitely in a place where there's incredible openness. You know, when you've sat and meditated and you've rested the mind and you're just kind of resting and observing, and things begin to open up and the spaciousness becomes incredible. The awareness becomes sharp. This is, it's almost an unspeakable place. And this is difficult in writing the book, because much of what you're writing about and trying to aim the teachings towards is unspeakable. It's ineffable. There's no language for it, because when you enter this state, language doesn't exist. It has no meaning. You can't, because language is a conceptual entity as well. It's speaking about things back and forth. And when you enter this natural state, there's only the one thing, like your friend talked about, you know, when she died, she had the out-of-body experience. She recognized, as firsthand experience, that there really is only a oneness. And this is hard for most of us to get to realize.
Yes, exactly. So it is. It's that oneness. Let's talk about space. You bring up a really cool concept in your book. And you said, you know, the human body being an incredible 99.99% space.
Yes.
Substance of our body amounting to no more than a literal speck of dust.
Yes.
So when you say the space in our body is equal to that of the universe above proportionally, what are you really suggesting, and why would you bring this out for us to think about?
Because this is what you're ultimately, it actually is an orchestrated part of the teachings in terms of letting go our strong attachment to the body. Because when you recognize, the Tibetans have been talking about the body is primarily space for forever. What they're now recognizing in quantum physics, they've probably been recognizing it since Einstein, but it's really now mappable, is that in between, you know, the proton and the atom shell, and you have billions of these protons and atoms in your body, trillions, there's so much space that I think it's between here and the moon. I'm not sure, but it's a large amount of, like, proportionally, like, between that proton and the atom shell, there is just so much space that if you were to remove all that space from every single cell, every single atom in your body, your body would just shrink to a speck of dust. And so when you go, when you go into the proton level and you look upwards, it would be like us looking up to the universe above and seeing, okay, well, that cell over there is actually that star for us out there. So the proportion of all matter throughout the universe is about that 0.001% matter and 99.9% space.
Wow.
So this is good to know because it affirms what we begin to see in our own meditation practice of this, this incredible space that we recognize the body is within the awareness, and the body is just one of everything else within the awareness. So it affirms that experience rather than we doubt what we've just experienced as being true. Now we have scientific data that shows that it's all true.
Yes.
So this is good to know, as much as it is, but it's important to experience it, because if you don't experience it, then it's intellectual knowledge.
Right.
Experience it in your meditation means it's direct,
right,
one-to-one knowledge with who you are.
Ah, oh, wow. That's beautiful. I love that. So getting back to Dzogchen, when we're using that practice, other meditative experiences as well, but when we're doing that, and you were talking, of course, about quantum physics, and are we entering the field, and are we opening ourselves up for downloads? That's like the word now. I got to download, you know.
Yes.
Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, okay. We are entering that classic idea of the unified field.
Right.
Meditation speaks to the unified field. They speak to the vacuum. They speak to all these things. That unified field, that vacuum space, is filled with our awareness. And so, and that's the truth of this experience. So sorry, can you ask your question one more time? Because I almost got it all, but.
No, it's really cool. I was just asking if when we get into Dzogchen and we're in a deep, you know, practice,
yes,
are we opening up ourselves to downloads from the field, or are we, we're totally in with universal consciousness, but
yes.
Are we completely empty and open to what we need to hear?
Yes.
Or is that what that is?
Yeah. And what you need to hear, it's not necessarily what you're hearing through your ears. It's knowledge that's already in you, and it arises up within you. So the wisdom being that you're seeking in the world through teachings actually is coming up from within. And once you enter this state of awareness that is non-conceptual, the knowing of all things and all truths begins to come up in you and speak to you. And so also, yes, as you say, you're also open to other perspectives and other awarenesses that are also very open and practicing. And, you know, so you can receive teachings from a master around the world, you know, and many of the great masters have, while they're sitting in meditation in a cave in Tibet, they're receiving teachings from their master, say, who's in Europe or whatever. So this is where the fourth time begins to really take recognition, because now there's no time, there's no distance, there's no anything. It's just your awareness and all things.
Right.
Again, in quantum physics, they point to, they could tweak an atom or a molecule here, and they'll recognize the entanglement effect hundreds and hundreds of miles away, if not light years away. They'll see, so they'll recognize that everything's connected almost instantaneously.
Yeah.
And we can arrive to this space through our meditation.
Todo el mundo. I mean, there are things that I think are brilliant that I come up with, and I get a call from my friend out in England or in France, you know, and they say, oh, I just had this great concept. We're like tuning in, of course.
Yes.
Because we're very close.
Instantaneous.
Exactly. I just thought I had such an amazing individual thought. It was like, no. So they're all out there, and we're really transmitters and receivers, basically.
Totally. And right now our lights are down, or is shut off. We're not receiving. We're not transmitting much because we're so focused on so many billions of different things. But we are transmitters and receivers, and all of that information is out there. Everything you're seeking, all you have to do is quiet the mind, and you'll get the answers, like, in short time.
Yeah, and So that really makes a lot of sense. Mm. Really does make a lot of sense. So, yeah. So I thought that was pretty interesting how things have already been or we're communicating psychically because we're so close energetically, even though we're on, you know, different parts of the world.
Totally.
Together.
So totally,
That really helped. Yeah. When a lot of the Judeo-Christian teachings talk about, you know, that prayer is meditation.
Yeah.
Right. Davening, you know, and prayers and whatever to whom, who, whatever is really important and significant. The prayer mode. But I guess what I'm saying is, how does that type of meditation and focus to God or Yahweh or whoever, Buddha, Muhammad, whoever that God or higher power is, how does that differ from some of the teachings of Dzogchen?
I think in the way we spoke to earlier, if you're praying to something else, then you're recognizing a separation, a duality. You're recognizing that I'm different than that, and I would love the assistance or guidance of that.
Yeah.
Well, this is, you know, while we're in the conceptual state, this is beautiful because we're opening our hearts to these higher beings that we're seeking guidance from, we're seeking help from, you know, assistance of any kind from. But what the Dzogchen teachings will say is all knowing is within, and all you have to do is get to know your own awareness in its natural state, not in the conceptual state. And you will get all of the guidance and all of the assistance and all of the knowing you need, because what you're coming to do is know your eternal self.
Yes.
Self that will go beyond this world, that will go beyond what... in the conceptual sense, God could be here in this world, but when we die, we may not have any concept of God. We may, but we may not. So nothing's sure, but what we are sure about is once we enter our own awareness, we begin to recognize that this is eternal, because you recognize that there is no beginning and end to this awareness. And this is where we gain confidence, strength, and a sense of knowing that the God that Christ was speaking to is within, is truly within. So I think that's the difference, is awareness, because you can't get anywhere without your awareness. Once your awareness leaves you, it's death.
Right.
And so this body, when the body loses awareness, the body is dead. You can poke it, you can kick it, you could do whatever you want. It's not going to respond. But that awareness will continue on and it will still experience. It will still have a perspective. It'll experience pain and pleasure. And then it'll take a new body and again, continue on. So the key here is let's get to know this awareness so it doesn't have to necessarily take on many more bodies. We can stabilize in the awareness and then become a teacher or a great whatever.
Beautiful. So do you think in that which you just said, do you think that we choose to come back to have more experiences for lessons on this plane, or is that what you think? Or
well, you know, if you look at all other sentient beings on the planet, they don't have the ability to be self-conscious, self-cognizant. So the being a human, being in this form, is a beautiful, beautiful gift. This is why we need to take care of our bodies. This is why we need to eat healthy. We need to be kind to other people, because it returns. And so we want to do as best we can for ourselves and for others. So if the reason we're here is so we can continue to evolve, because being in the body means we're allowed to receive teachings, we're allowed to spend time with ourselves and self-reflect. Most other sentient beings don't have this ability just yet, or in this body, on this planet. This planet has certain limitations. And on this planet, the humans have the ability to self-reflect. This is a gift. And so we should do our best to honor this gift by taking our life here, however long or short it is, and really trying to elevate ourselves somehow.
I think that's really true. And I think, and again, so we'll kind of choose to come back to learn more if we're in that, you know, when we when our body dies, we're in the universal consciousness of, come on down. And do you think we choose the environment in which we want to grow up in for our lessons? Or
I would like to think so. Now, if you would have asked me that 30, 40 years ago, I would have said, why would I have come into this? You know, like for me, I felt a lot of trauma in my life when I was growing up. Sure. And I felt like I came into this world with it. Like I felt like I came into this world afraid and terrorized and, you know, dubious of the people around me and the purpose of being in this body. But through the practice and through me being on the planet for long enough, I really am so grateful for being here and recognize that I surely have come here, you know, on this planet for these teachings that I've received in this life. And I'm so grateful.
Wow, that's beautiful.
So I think we do, but honestly, I'm not evolved enough to say yes or no to that question, but I believe we do.
Oh, I agree with you. You know, I was also listening to a study on people who are geniuses, the artists, the musicians, more right brain oriented. And they talked about these studies with people who had early existing trauma.
Yeah.
And or trauma to the left side of the brain. And I mean, you look at a lot of the so-called prodigies or geniuses or people who are really aware and producing some amazing thing. And just, I mean, whether they're mathematicians or speaking easily different languages, you know, that kind of thing. A lot of it, you know, was the result of early trauma because they had to shut down that processing side of their brain to analyze. And they just went into, you know, more of an alpha, right?
Yes.
Theta stage of the brain in order to survive. And that's what they did. So consequently, you know, they're really gifted in many ways.
Truly, truly.
We're too much in that left brain and that, you know, cognitive word BS going on constantly.
Yeah, and we also give away a lot of our power early on, so we're not traumatized, so we're not seen as different.
Yeah, we do.
And part of the beauty of each individual on this planet is they come into this world with incredibly unique gifts. And part of the trauma they experience is that they hold true to those gifts and they don't try to compromise and move into the larger society and become normal. And so there's trauma involved with that, but they persist and they blow through all of that. And then they deal with their trauma, but they've also had these incredible gifts that they now share with the world. And people, oh my God, thank you for giving it to us. But they were brutalized in trying to stay true to those gifts early on. So it's a double-edged sword.
Yeah, it really is. You know, it really is a double-edged sword. And by the way, in case you guys just tuned in, here's the book. Hearing the Mind, Sivan Hassett. The Key to a Beckoning Doorway with Age-Old Meditation Practices that Take You Straight into the Mind in Its Natural State. And that is what? The state of pure consciousness. Is what we're trying to achieve here. And that helps towards reducing some of that trauma that you were just talking about. It sort of just allows us to have, you know, more freedom and not hold on to those ego-based fears.
Yes.
Anything we can name. I mean, fear, anger, frustration, shame. That's a huge one. Guilt and shame.
Yeah.
And that speaks to what you were just talking about. Of trying to survive and put on a face for everyone, shoving down all that stuff and trying to we become hypervigilant.
Yes. You
know, everyone around us, we have to know the cues so we can be good boys or good girls or whatever, you know, whatever that means. So, but we're constantly turned on to have to figure out what's going on so we can, you know, feel good about ourselves.
Yeah.
And so we
So when you're in that fight or flight mode, there really isn't much time to really enjoy the world because there's too much danger around every turn, and danger in the form of people or, you know, our historical experience, the narratives that we speak of danger at every turn, lock the doors, hide things, you know, be suspicious. So when these stories begin to leave us, through just simply practicing on looking at your own awareness, what is amazing, it fills this space, is again, this more love. Like even for me, I my heart felt like it was wounded and shut down for many, many years. And I really wanted it to open. And I recognized in the end, there was fear involved. There was confusion involved, but just sitting in meditation practice and studying these Dzogchen teachings, there was a point that I got, I recognized that the fear was gone and there was more love in my heart. And there was actually, I was more kind to people I didn't know, and all kinds of things that I never thought I would see in myself was beginning to appear in my behaviors. And, you know, walking slower, eating slower, enjoying meals, all these things just naturally occurred.
Yes. Yes.
It was unbelievable.
That's beautiful. And so if there are some suggestions or ideas you might give viewers and listeners about, you know, just sort of stepping in to Dzogchen, what would they be to help them prepare themselves for this type of meditation?
Yeah, well, I think there's a lot of people who are meditating, and this is great. This is the beginning. You're probably have developed a foundational practice where you're comfortable in your own meditation, or perhaps you're thinking about it and you want to, you know, I'm too afraid to go in, or I don't have the time. Maybe knowing that at the end of a couple of years, all of the anxiety or anything you're feeling might be gone. So that could be a good incentive. Maybe you're in a relationship right now where you feel trapped. And you know, there's no alternatives. You have to be there. You can't pay the rent. You can't leave your husband. He's abusive, or you're unhappy. Now, if you begin to practice this meditation practice, you begin to recognize that the space is everywhere around you, and there's space right where you're sitting, and then there's space in the imagination, and this opens up incredible doorways that you have no idea are right there with you at all times. And so the jobs may come, the beautiful relationship will come, the opportunities comes, the simple quieting of your, instead of the noise and the trauma of your own daily experience, that calms too. So this is a good way to look at it, of saying, maybe I'll just try to meditate a little bit. Now, if you meditate with Dzogchen, it gives you a reason to meditate. You won't get bored. You won't think, why am I doing this? Because it gives you the specific reasons why you're doing it. And it gives you the end, what you're aiming for. And it gives you all the tools to know how to do it. So it's, in that sense, Dzogchen is awesome.
Oh, that is so cool. I really love that. And so when you're talking about the space around you, right? And this, you're getting space. You're not talking about 3D conceptual space.
Right.
Exactly.
It's space. It's all space. It's space within ourselves. It's space within our mind. It's space within the furniture. It's literally space. Space is, and that's why in the book I use all kinds of natural metaphors. Almost every single metaphor in the book is of something of natural: wind, space, the stars, the moon. Because the natural world around us informs us of of ourselves. And if we pay more attention to that and become more conscious of the space around us and the natural things happening around us, we get a better sense of who we are as individuals amongst it all.
Beautiful. Well, we're just about ready to wrap up here, but I wanted to ask you, what's the best way that viewers and listeners can find out more about you, get your book, and tune into your Riot Material magazine as well?
Yeah, you can go to enteringthemind.com, and that takes you to Riot Material. It takes you to a kind of a page within the magazine. The magazine is an art magazine. You could also go to riotmaterial.com, and that's also a way into the book, or Amazon. But enteringthemind.com will take you to, we have some podcasts. I'll put your show up on the tour page, and then, you know, you can read a couple chapters of the book, see if you like it or not, if it's right for you. And you can also read about good art, good film throughout on the magazine.
Exactly. Beautifully said. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. Michelle. Yeah. Beautiful conversation.
Oh, we did. I just love getting as much knowledge as I can from you, because it's just, I loved your book. By the way, here it is again, folks. Check it out. C. Von Hassett, also co-author, Rachel Reed Wilkie. Wish she could have been here today. She sounds lovely. But anyway, blessings to you. And thank you so much for being on the couch.
Thank you.
Bye. All right, guys. As I say, do take care of yourselves first. And then you'll be great for others. And don't forget to meditate, relax, breathe. All right. Talk to you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.